Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Deanna Potter, your petite powerhouse and host for Sassy Sales and Business Development. And with me today is a very special leading lady, Kat Rippey, and she is the Director of Organization Development for the Center for Organization Effectiveness. Welcome and good morning, Kat.
Good morning, Deanna.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I really do appreciate it. I know when I tapped you on the shoulder a few weeks and I said, please, 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 you were so generous in saying, of course, that you would join us, because I know you have lots of wonderful information to share with us, and I'm really excited to have you joining us today. For the pitfalls and powerhouse wins of the public sector, you know, hot, sexy, exciting information when we talk public sector, right?
Absolutely, especially when
always.
We're involved.
Yes, always. Exactly, exactly, exactly. So I want to jump right in because, you know, we talk organization development and people like to, you know, we love our acronyms in this world and we like to call it OD, OD, OD. But you know what? I got to be honest with you. Until I started playing in the sandbox many years ago and more recently, more so now and some new roles that I've got, you know, there's a lot of people out there who go, what the heck is OD? So tell me, can you share with our listeners, what is it? What's your definition? You've got tons of experience in it. I would say you're an expert in the field, no doubt. So tell us, what is OD for those out there who are going, you know, somebody tell me what the heck this is.
Yeah, it's not exactly related to the drug field, as that might suggest, right? If you call that a field.
There you go. Hey, some people are out there illegally making a great living, unfortunately.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some connection somewhere. But first of all, thank you for having me on the show. This is great and really excited to be here, so I appreciate that. The OD question is something that I think I have yet to completely master. I'll just be quite honest. Every time I have a conversation with anyone, right, whether it's the elevator talk or the dinner talk or whatever, I have never, ever sat across from somebody who knew what the heck I was talking about. So I think it's hilarious that it's something that once you're in the field, there's so many people kind of doing it and dabbling in different areas. And yet, just from a more general perspective, it's an elusive industry, if you'll call it that. And so I don't really have a definition, but I can say that there's a couple of different ways that you get into OD. And one of them would be through kind of an academic approach where you learn about organization behavior, organization systems, and how organizations work, and you partner with them to do things well and do things better and more efficiently, et cetera. And then the other way is kind of when you've had some experience in organizations, usually frustrating experiences, and you want to fix that and make it better. And so from that, I would say that OD is really, organization development is really an industry related to helping organizations be more effective in everything that they do, from the people, hiring and working together and connecting on the work that they do and the product or whatever it is that they're trying to create, as well as the systems perspective, right? Making sure that we have technologies that support us, et cetera. So, and from the very, very top, the vision piece, the strategic, you know, what's our strategic direction? Where are we trying to go? How do we clarify that for all of our stakeholders and get everybody on board with where this organization is going? All of those different pieces play a role, and how you tap into that as an OD professional can be different depending on your interests and your skill and capabilities.
So when you say it that way, it sounds like you would have job security for life.
Totally. Absolutely.
that, and I know, you know, some organizations do it better than others, but all organizations are living, breathing, or, you know, entities that are, I would imagine, are constantly dealing with some sort of a dynamic.
Absolutely. And even when you've had,
yeah.
I mean, I guess one of the most frustrating parts of my job is that you may have a great experience. You may get a team completely running smoothly, and then something changes and you kind of have to start all over again. Right. It's a perpetual dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always changing, always shifting.
So, tell me this. I know that, you know, you use your expertise in the public sector primarily, and you have quite an extensive background in public sector, quite a lot of it. Tell me how you got your toe in that water.
Sure. Well, it actually goes back a little farther behind public sector. When I was in my undergraduate degree program, I was studying communication, and I was trying to determine what I wanted to be when I grew up, much to my parents' chagrin. And I took a intro to communication class, and the teacher talked very briefly about organizational behavior. It was like a chapter in the book, right? And I went to his office and I said, that's what I want to do. I want to work with organizations to be better. How do I do that? And of course, he didn't really have any suggestions for me because it was just a chapter in the book for him, right? And so what I found was it was really hard to kind of get into it from a inexperienced kind of young person's perspective without going into kind of a big firm experience after I graduated. So instead, I went and got just a regular job and found myself being quite miserable on a pretty dysfunctional team with a very dysfunctional boss. And that was the moment for me that I realized, you know, we spend 80% of our time or so at work, and there's no room for that to be a miserable experience. That needs to be something that, you know, people do good work together and enjoy coming together. Otherwise, it's just why live, right? And so I left that job and I went back to graduate school. So for me, it really kind of started in graduate school, because as part of that PhD program that I was in, I had to do an internship, and my internship was at the county. And that was a great start for me. I started off doing some assessment work, kind of interfacing with customers and getting insights on the customer experience, which had been my background from my first job. That very quickly grew into, they were really hungry for tapping into someone who had knowledge and expertise that I did. So it became, hey, can you help us with some strategic planning? Hey, could you help us with some coaching and development? Hey, maybe we could develop kind of a leadership program. And so that was what excited me, developing internal programs to help the organization be better. And so I kind of started with that. It grew outside of the department I was working in to be more of a partner in different departments within the county at large. And then, however, I will say I didn't, you know, desire a career in the public sector necessarily. I wanted to go be a big consultant, right? Big fancy consultant. Got to drive a Porsche or something fun like that. And so I left to go pursue my dreams of consulting. And I partnered up with a smaller consulting firm that did kind of big firm type consulting, a lot of change management and kind of boots on the ground, sit within the organization and play that role. And that wasn't what I loved. I really...
You got there and discovered it wasn't what you thought it would be?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's
and
funny
so,
how that happens, isn't it?
Yeah. But the funny thing was I kept getting pulled back into public sector because I had some experience with that. And so all of a sudden, I was getting some consulting gigs that came directly from public sector agencies or partnering with people who are working in public sector as consultants. And so being in San Diego, public sector is really a large industry down here. It's an easier industry to tap into in a lot of senses. And so that's just kind of where I've ended up for the most part. I definitely have done, you know, private and nonprofit and other work, but I found that public sector is the one where I've been able to provide the most value because I do kind of speak their lingo. I understand where they're coming from and what they need.
So what do you like most about working with public sector organizations and individuals?
You know, I find them to be, this is generalistic, but I find them to be very open and like good students and learners, right? They're hungry and thirsty for what expertise can bring to them that they don't necessarily have. And I find that to be a little bit different from private sector, where private sector is a little bit more competitive, I guess, right? Competitive. You've got just a lot more of a blend of people who've studied different things working together. And in public sector, I find that they're really interested in improving and having somebody come in and help them out. So it's more like working with family, honestly, in my experience.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Why do you think that that is? Why do you think that the public sector is so open to that and almost eager or wanting that so much? Do you think that, I mean, I have my thoughts. I want to hear yours.
A lot of times, so I'll say that one of the things I spend the most time doing is really working with leadership at all levels to lead their people. And in doing that, a lot of times we do different personal style assessments. The DISC happens to be one of the ones that we use a lot just because it's pretty simple in terms of its terminology, and it's pretty easy to use as a way to build a common language among team members and within an entire organization. And what we have found is that a lot of them, a large percentage in public sector agencies, like between 30% and 40%, really reside within the personal styles that are kind of steady and planful and learner oriented. And so they're also there to play a kind of enforcement role. If you think about public sector and what it's really there for, it's to, you know, establish rules and guidelines for us to live in safe communities, right? And so their personalities tend to kind of support that quite well, where that's the work they enjoy doing. And it's work that's around keeping things in order and keeping things running smoothly. And I think that that makes them somewhat amenable to working with other people and being open to hearing about how they can do their jobs better. They're very interested in doing their jobs well. Does that make sense?
Interesting. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I got to know,
what
was your theory?
What
was your theory?
Yeah, I did. I was having a conversation with a colleague of mine, and we were talking about some of it being tied to what we recently went through as a society economically. You know, what we saw we talked about this, you know, the parallels and some of the differences between private and public sector. 2008, you know, financially what that did and what we went through with, you know, training and lack of funds and, you know, what organizations had to do with that and so forth and where the money needs to go and how, you know, when there isn't some of that ability to spend money on training and support and leadership development and coaching and management needs, that, you know, when they do get that support and that leadership, they're very open to and very excited to receive it, you know, when it's there, when it's given. And, you know, we had that kind of a conversation, and I won't bore you, obviously, with the details because we have limited time. So I was just curious if you sometimes see that. And I'm not talking the mandatory stuff where you're going to go to this class.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Where you walk
right.
in and you're hoping that they're focused and they're paying attention. But, you know, some of the other things. So I was just
you
curious.
You are right in that they're so much more fiscally dialed in that they don't have access to it as frequently, so they don't necessarily take it for granted. For sure,
yeah,
I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, there's not a lot of all the fringe benefits that some of the private sector has available to them. So,
right.
So tell me this. So that's the stuff that you like most. Let's hear it. We want all that honesty. We're women supporting women in this organization. Tell us, what do you find the most frustrating? Some of the biggest challenges. Give us the down and dirty.
Okay, I'll try to be PC. I'm just kidding.
Actually, there's no. I'm fibbing. There's no one listening. It's just you and me. It's okay.
No, I don't know. There's a million directions I could take this. I mean, I think as with anyone who does any kind of consulting or sales work, there's your typical frustrations with, you know, getting in, finding an open door, et cetera. I will say being an independent consultant is a lot more difficult than working at the center, where there's automatically a relationship there. So finding those opportunities.
I'm sorry, really quick. The center's been in business how long? So some of your relationships have been there years?
Oh, yeah. So the Center for Organization Effectiveness actually started out of the City of San Diego as its own organization effectiveness department, and then spun off as a joint powers authority. And so, I mean, the City of San Diego has been working with us since inception. And then we have other, I would say the region of San Diego, we've worked with the majority of public sector organizations, small and large, and then throughout the state, probably more so in the last 10 years or so, 10 or 12 years. So, but there's a really solid reputation there too. So I would say one of the things about public sector is that they all support each other. So they're always finding opportunities to collaborate together. So, you know, you have an HR director in one city that then collaborates with all of the other HR directors in different cities and talk about their challenges and share their best practices, et cetera. So there's a lot of kind of interagency collaboration and also in the line of transparency, which is a big challenge as well. I mean, you can look at that one either way. It's a positive and it has challenges where everything is an open book, right? Your contracts are going to be out there and available for everybody to see. Your IP collateral is somewhat exposed in a transparent fashion. It's hard to protect. The processes of going through a contract can take months and months and months, even with well-established relationships and work that's already been done in the past. So those things can be frustrating, although I would say they're probably similar from industry to industry. The other challenges I would say, especially right now, is kind of this old brigade, new brigade. I mean, I think the public sector is a great personification, if you will, of the generational transition that we're going through. And so we have a lot of people who've got a lot of tenure, and they've been here for a really long time, and they have a lot of long-term knowledge. That's all leaving quickly. We've had organizations we've been working with over the last 5 years that within a three-year period of time will have a full 50 to 60% turnover of their executive team or within a particular division or department. You know, that's huge. And like you said, that does keep us employed because with that transition, they need a lot of help. But it's overwhelming. And bringing in new talent behind that to fill those shoes is equally difficult. To attract talent, you know, everything kind of moves at the speed of light right now, and government does not, and it really shouldn't. But at the same time, that makes it hard to interview somebody and then hire them in a way that doesn't take so much time that they go find a different opportunity, right? Compensation varies from place to place in terms of its similarity to other fields, I guess, but being competitive. but at the same time, you do still have a lot of other benefits of working in public sector that can, you know, pay off over the long haul. The long-term compensation packages, you know, the pensions and all that stuff are changing, and that's been a big challenge for them to attract and retain people. I think government, more than anybody, has been having to get used to people not sticking with their jobs forever, which is also a positive and a negative all at once, right? But they haven't had to think through the challenges of having a more constant turnover. So that's a big newer thing for them to have to face on an ongoing basis. So, and that's all happening at the same time that they're literally having to do some massive hiring and recruiting efforts over the next 5 years. We have a lot of our clients facing 60 to 70% turnover in the next 5 years, which is pretty incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. First off, I want to step back because you said something that was really interesting. And I think that unfortunately, you know, you would go out to portions of the public and they would say, government moves so slow. Why does everything take so long? Red tape, right? And you made a comment, you know, you said the term speed of light and government should not move like that. Tell me what you meant by that comment.
Yeah, without getting in too much trouble, huh? you know, I recently went on a girls' trip to a professional girls' trip, actually, which was kind of fun for in light of this audience, girls supporting girls, right? We went just across the border to inland from Ensenada, the Guadalupe Valley, and did some wine tasting. And on the way back, well, during the weekend, we had that torrential downpour. Mm-hmm. And so on the way back, I noticed, you know, we had gone from a day of wine tasting where, of course, compared to Napa, the roads are not just dirt and gravel, but they're like valleys of, it's like a full off-roading experience, okay? So, that was one experience, but to go from that in the dry zone to the next day and realizing, oh, there are some roads that have been washed out completely. You drive through town and, you know, like the gas station they had to move the mud and dirt out of the way for you to get gas. And then we're driving on the highway and half of it had to be shut down for dealing with debris and rocks and all that stuff. And then, you know, the toll road part was actually closed down because of the dirt and the mud. And I'm just looking around fascinated at all of this and thinking, oh my gosh, is it that bad? You know, what's it going to look like when I get home? And yeah. Also just looking out the window, usually I'm a driver, so it's kind of nice to be able to just observe out the windows and see how they build, how the buildings are built up on hills and kind of building on top of building and unfinished building on top of unfinished building and debris and garbage in different areas. And I had this huge experience of recognizing they don't have the infrastructure that we have, right? They don't have the garbage necessarily pickup that we have in different areas, right? Where they do have to just pick a lot where all the garbage goes. And this is not really an enlightening moment, but at the same time, just when you look at something right next to the two different countries right next to each other and see we have infrastructure for a reason. Does anybody really want to go to the planning department and get approval for all of your, do you really want to go through a year-long process to get approval for your home site? Do you really want to have to pay the money to get the approval for your home site, right? And at the same time, if we don't, what you have is kind of mass chaos. And so I think that the public needs to do a better job of understanding the way that we live and the streets that we drive on, you know, the toilets we get to flush. All of these things don't happen magically. There's people doing a lot of hard work behind the scenes on that. And
gotcha.
There is a reason for doing it in the right way. And the public sector gets a lot of flack for doing their jobs. And could they do it better? Absolutely. And I think they know that. They want to improve on that. They don't like the bureaucracy either. They complain about it just as much as the public does, you know. But there is a reason for it. And I think we need to respect that first and foremost and recognize what's the purpose behind the rule and how do we, is there a better way to enforce the rule or is it a rule that needs to change? Certainly there are rules that need to change sometimes, but
yeah,
that's my soapbox.
I was going to say, I think you might get some fan mail from some public sector employees going, thank you, thank you. So thank you. I wanted to understand, and I think I absolutely agree, and I applaud your response. So getting to what you were saying about, you know, a lot of the turnover that's coming, one of my questions was going to be, what are some of the trends that you are seeing? So it sounds like you've shared some of those with us. I would guess maybe you're doing a lot of succession planning right now. Is that true?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Succession planning, kind of, most of the agencies are taking a lot of effort to put into their recruitment efforts. I've seen a lot of good work go in there to the recruitment process and actually doing some really good selection where they're getting the right candidates in. What I'm seeing the challenge with is kind of these right candidates coming in to a mixed bag of readiness to kind of move forward it with a new eye. And so management development, right? Being there for those individuals who are tasked with leading a team and leading a team forward where they have a whole lot going on with that team. There's a huge opportunity there. I think, you know, one of my biggest challenges in working with public sectors in your highest leadership level, you want your leaders to be visionaries. You want them to kind of create that compelling reason for everybody to work together and move forward together. And at the same time, their role really is to manage the organization. You have public, you know, elected officials that are more at the helm of guiding the future of the organization. And so that's a complexity that doesn't exist to the same extent in different organizations. It's a little bit like having a board, right, and a president, but it's a little bit different too, especially with the elected nature where they are so beholden to their constituents. So there's work to be done there, I think, in terms of how do we help our leaders lead charismatically and at the same time very effectively fill that manager role that they have to run the organization.
Well, so I have to ask you, I usually wrap up. Thank you, first of all, so much. You've shared such great examples and wonderful, wonderful information. But I always like to ask our leading lady at the end, for you as a woman leading in business on a daily, everyday basis, what do you find is your biggest challenge just on a regular daily basis? What's the one thing that you struggle with the most? And what's the one thing that you find you do the best?
Well, I'm going to speak from my personal experience of having a dual income household with two very, I don't know, go-getter parents, right? And we have children. Okay. So managing the whole mommy role at the same time as, you know, I feel like I'm always doing three jobs at the same time every moment of my day. So
got it.
How do I be the empathetic mom that my children and my husband need? How do I keep thinking about driving business and really helping my clients succeed? I feel like I'm constantly needed. So
got it.
That can
got
be
it.
Challenging.
Okay.
So kind of finding opportunities to step back and nourish myself is a challenge, and that's something I'm always trying to get better at. Then the other thing I would say is for sure in the public sector industry, still trying to earn kind of the respect and the, being able to stand on the same ground as a 60-year-old white male. I don't know how else to say
that.
Got
it. That's okay.
But,
it's okay.
You know, being able to be respected on that same level for what you bring to the table. So
awesome.
Those would be kind of, I think, my two daily challenges.
And what do you do best?
Oh, thank you. What do I do best?
What do
I do best? Connecting with people, coming up with some really great ideas.
Awesome.
Every day. It's
awesome.
My favorite part of my day.
Cool. If people wanted to follow up, ask you any questions, find out more about the center, what's the easiest and best way for them to get in touch with you, Kat?
Probably via email.
Okay.
Which is Krippy. Do you want me to give you that? Or are you going to put that
I'll
there?
Do it.
Okay.
We'll go ahead.
Sorry.
It's K for Kat. K.
Yep.
Like a Kit Kat.
K-R-I-P-P-Y.
And that's at tcfoe.com. We will make sure we get all this on the the Connected Women of Influence website. And in the meantime, I would like to thank you all for joining us and enjoying this interview with our leading lady, Kat Rippey, from the Center for Organization Effectiveness. Please remember, everyone, that we are here every Monday at 9 a.m. and Fridays at 2 p.m. Our leading lady on Friday will be Jody Greenier. She's the executive director at Foundation for Women Warriors. And the topic will be Honoring Women Warriors for Life. The Foundation for Women Warriors is the nonprofit beneficiary for the 2017 Women of Influence Award. And again, I thank you for joining us. I am Deanna Potter, your petite powerhouse and the host for Sassy Sales and Business Development. And I thank you for listening. Everyone have a great week.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.